Hello, good afternoon,
everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the press conference for Disney Pixar's Incredibles 2. What did you think of the movie? Well, we have a very big panel in our press conference today, so without further ado, let's bring up the cast and filmmakers, starting with Holly Hunter, Craig T. Nelson, Sarah Vowell, writer director Brad Bird, Sophia Bush, Samuel L. Jackson, producer Nicole Grindel, the new Dash, Huck Milner, Catherine Keener, Bob Odenkirk, and producer John Walker. Okay, that was nice, right?
Thanks for coming.
Okay, well, the first question, I rewatched the first movie on Monday night just to, you know, refresh and recharge. And when I saw the movie on Tuesday, like, not a second goes by between the two films. Right. What was behind the decision to pick it up right away instead of, like, having, like, an older Violet, an older Dash, an older Jack?
I just thought it was kind of bold and weird. because I think people take the time that passes very literally, and they think that linearly the characters should have aged. But if they age, their superpowers don't reflect the part of life that they're in and their role in the family. So, I worked on the first 8 seasons of The Simpsons, and The Simpsons are, you know, haven't aged a day, and they're still on the air. So it worked for them, and why not us?
Why not?
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about makeup or anything like that.
Right.
But Nicole and John, there is obviously been a big leap in technology since the first movie. You know, how did you really take advantage of those advancements and improvements to make Incredibles 2 really pop on the screen?
Well, honestly, the technology has allowed us to make the film look more like what Brad intended it to look like the first time. The characters are much more finely nuanced and developed. We were able to build a lot more sets more quickly. We've populated the world with a lot more characters that have hair and clothing. And that's stuff that, you know, most of y'all don't notice, but actually that makes the world feel richer and more alive. Not to mention all the other visual effects stuff. And we've also got a lot of artists who have had 14 years to get better at their craft. And a lot of artists who were, some of them, kids when the first film came out, and it's a dream come true for them to work on this film.
Well, one member here who wasn't even a kid when the first movie came out.
Oh, man.
So, Huck, when did you see the first movie, for the first time, and how did it come about that you're going to be part of Incredibles 2?
Well, I saw the first movie when I was, like, 5 or something. Because
he was becoming a man.
My dad showed me it, and because he really loved the first one, and I really loved it too. And my favorite character was Dash, probably. So, and
that's unexpected.
And when I got the audition, I was watching the movie over and over again. And when my mom got sick of watching it, I used the audition as an excuse to watch it again.
What was it like being at the premiere the other day with everyone that you had made the movie with, and especially because you were such a big fan of the first one?
It was amazing and overwhelming because, in the beginning when I got out of the car, everyone was like, sign this. And I'm not used to that. Then when I got inside, I felt more welcome than I felt. And it was just really amazing to be there.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So a lot of people, I'm sure, have noticed, and certainly it's getting picked up a lot, is the role reversal with this movie between Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible. I mean, Violet really steps up, and there's other things that happen in the film too. And we want to be careful of spoilers. But Holly, you know, what was your first take when you first read the screenplay, however long ago that was, and saw that role reversal?
Well, I didn't read the screenplay because there wasn't really one.
That's the whole script?
He's the screenplay. He was my walking encyclopedia. He
has pages.
He was my instruction manual. That's it right there. So, Brad, I mean, we were like, yeah, it was a while before I truly realized what I was really going to get to do in the movie, and I was, you know, really thrilled. But it was like a retroactive thrill. Yeah. Because over a period of months before I started gleefully singing during our recording sessions about how great my part was. But to me, it was just really fun. I mean, I don't think that this is a message movie in any way. I think it's purely like luck of the draw that this happens to be dovetailing with Me Too and Time's Up. But obviously, time is up, okay? and I feel that way personally, and it happens to be serendipitously reflected in this particular movie. But at the same time, you know, it's character revelation, period. Everybody is having revelations, including Jack-Jack. I mean, all the characters are revelations to the audience and to themselves. And so I'm no exception as Elastigirl.
Even there's a raccoon that goes on a hero's journey.
In fact, I feel like in some ways Violet's adolescent thing, her jag in this movie, The Rage, is there's adolescence that I feel from Mr. Incredible and also from Elastigirl too. Like when I get on that, oh, sorry. Oh yeah, you guys haven't seen the movie?
They saw the movie,
but we can't.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
Okay.
Yeah. Frank, what's your take on that too?
Yeah. So anyway, the part you don't want to hear about the spoiler, here it is. You know,
Ozone dies.
She has to go there.
So dark.
You are so weird. It's just amazing. And in the movie too. I'm on board with Huck. You know, I auditioned and my mom got angry. No, wait a minute. I was resentful when I was told where Mr. Incredible was going to be in this film. Not saving lives, not exhibiting any kind of strength at all.
You exhibit the biggest kind of strength.
Quiet. Yeah, we argued about it. And then I found out that I'm going to be helping save the family. And Bob's going to learn how to be a dad, and he's going to learn about these kids. And then the process started when we were recording. It was just so much fun. I mean, the stuff I did with Violet and the two of us together, and then you know, Jack-Jack and that whole discovery, and then Dash, and then having to deal with Elastigirl after doing what I want to do, but being able to give her the encouragement and let her know that everything's okay at home, you know. It was just a lot of fun. And so honored to be a part of it, to be doing this film.
Well, Sophia, I know you're not only a big fan of the first movie, you're a big Pixar fan too. So what blew you away in terms of working with the Pixar team, working with Brad, working with the other filmmakers?
One of the things that I just think is so cool about the whole thing is the layering of all the technology that makes these films look to all of us the way they look in Brad's head. It's wild to see the early stages of animation and to watch some of the scenes and then see what they become in the final edit. And it's also totally nuts to go into the studio, and I know that technically I'm talking to Holly, but she's not there. It's like me and Brad, and I'm just yelling into a void going, am I doing this right?
Yelling into a what?
Oh, God! I didn't even mean to do that, actually. That's embarrassing. I'm sweating. That's a subconscious trick that we play on ourselves. I've said incredible so many times today while describing the film, and I'm like, that's terrible. But it's really just so much fun, and he knows what she's done in the room, and he knows how our voices are going to sound together, so you just, you know, you trust your captain, and when he tells you you've gotten it right, that the tone is right, or the volume, or the, you know, the size of your yelling, it's very cool.
You know, not only do we not see a screenplay, sometimes, like, we don't know where we are in any scene, so you're like, is this in a car? How loud am I? Like, you're trying to get a sense of the literal architecture of where the character is.
Yes.
Because everything has to be, you know, everything has to be drawn from scratch. And so, live actor, they're actually in the car or a facsimile thereof. So, like, trying to gauge, but, like, where it is, that is what the scene is about sometimes. You know, like, if it's not just that they're at a kitchen table, it's everything that being a family at a kitchen table implies, you know?
That's so true. It's like, are you talking to a person who's sitting as far away from each other as we are, or somebody who's in the back of the room? Because
yeah.
It does change what you're doing vocally.
Yeah, I want to ask Samuel Jackson here. I want to ask you. So, okay, you are Frozone. You are Nick Fury. And basically part of two superhero, you know, families here. So, you know, when the first Incredibles came out in 2004 and won the Oscar for Best Animated Feature, I feel like some of the elements from that movie went into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And now, after 19 films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I feel like some of those elements went into Incredibles 2, a little in some way. I mean, do you see the influence of Incredibles on the Marvel films and now Marvel on Incredibles?
Can you tell us why you feel that way?
Family.
What family?
Family.
Well, as I remember, that family kind of fell out in Infinity War, didn't it? And, you know.
It happens.
And nobody called me to make them be good. I noticed that also. It's like, why am I not there quelling this fight? I did bring all these people into S.H.I.E.L.D. and now all of a sudden, I'm not there. So I don't know what you're talking about. I can't relate. The genre has grown and has grown inside this kind of one place. Sure, there's that other company that makes movies that are like this. A couple of them are good. There's a real interesting kind of playbook sometimes that I look at when I watch all the movies, and it's like they have this secret sauce that sometimes I wonder, because I'm there and I'm looking at the directors, I go, so these guys did a TV show. Why are they doing this? Or this person does these serious dramas. Why is he doing this? But there's something that they know or they find that, you know, make it work. And the relationships among the people on the inside of those films always become very intimate and intricate. And sometimes, like, the people that are really related, like Loki and Thor, they don't like each other. There's family discord. And the people that don't know each other that are looking for that connection become tied together in a very interesting sort of way. And you got your bratty brother and Iron Man, and you got your, you know, kind of lug, kind of special needs kid in Hulk, you know, and you got your sister who turns out to be Black Widow, who's a real killer, but heart of gold. So all these things come together and these people find a common goal, or they're all working toward the common good, which brings them together in a very unique and interesting way. And Nick Fury seems to be the kind of,
how did this turn into an Avengers press conference?
It didn't. I'm just saying that they don't let me work in all those movies for a reason. Because I really don't know what's going on, but I can pretend I do. kind of like this one. I really don't know what's going on, but I know they need me, and I make the icy stuff, and I make things happen in another kind of way. But thank you for allowing me to do that, Brad.
Sure, of course.
I appreciate it.
We really need a bow and arrow, though. We need a bow and arrow guy. Yeah.
You need a bow and arrow guy. We don't all need it.
Catherine Keener.
Poor
Hi. How are you? Hello. So, you know, working on the film and, you know, over the years or the extended period of time that you were voicing the character and then seeing the movie with the cast, with the crew, with the filmmakers on the big screen, like, what was that like for you to see the finished product for the first time? Because it's so different from live action.
It was very thrilling and fun.
I like it.
I just wanted to go back to a couple of things. First, I'm just getting to know all these people. Sarah and I have been friends for a long time, 15, 14 years, whatever. I've known Holly, I've known you guys. But I'm realizing that Brad kind of mined a lot of the inside of these people and the characters. And like Craig was talking about, I was just talking to him about his kids, and he's a big mush dad, granddad, and you can see that. All of these people are awesome. I'd see any movie where Holly is a badass, regardless of gender. I don't know, I've done press with this man. I know he's done roles where he's played maybe not so likable a guy. Is that right? But he actually is very, very sweet, and his character has that too. So I just appreciate how insightful you are, even though you're incredibly weird in a way, in the best way.
It's a compliment.
I love it. But anyway, so what it was like for me.
Can't fire her now.
Yeah, so anyway, what it was like for me to see that was, what it was like for me to see the movie the other night was to kind of get to know the people. I'm getting to know more now from doing this in a kind of, in their uniqueness as people here. So that's all.
How about you, Bob?
It was super fun to see it. I loved it. I've been knocked out by the visuals in this film, and I've only seen little moments from it in the course of recording this. So to see it in the big, beautiful color on the giant screen, I knew it was going to be amazing, and it's beyond all expectations. I feel like somehow there's new technology that you're not telling us about, but because it just looks, it's got such richness and depth that was a great treat. But again, like everyone else, I didn't read the whole script. There's never a whole script that you can read. So it's the first time I get to see the whole story, and I'm once again amazed at Brad Bird's talent as a writer and director and orchestrator of story. There's like five movies in this movie, and they all work together to throw each other into relief and make each other better. And it was a hell of an experience. And everyone in my family, including niece and nephew, young, my son and daughter, older, teenagers, everyone related to, they enjoyed the whole story, and everyone related to different characters and themes because there are so many and they're delivered on so well.
I just wanted to mention that when we first started working with Bob, his character wasn't so nice. And it changed over the course of working on the film, and you responded so well.
I loved it. I love that he became more genuine. I mean, we don't know. I'm not going to give away where he ends up, but when he starts, he's exuberant and excited and almost, and as he goes, you start to see an innocence to him that is, I think, a real twist and surprising. But where it ends up, I won't say.
Well, let's take questions from the audience. Debbie, you raised your hand first. Of course, you're in the first row.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say it, guys. Incredibles is beyond incredible. This is an amazing, amazing film. And for me personally, it's better than the first one. So kudos, Brad.
Thank you.
Yay.
Now, I want to ask you, Brad, everybody's talking about the visuals. The visuals are outstanding. But most particularly, I want to ask you about working with Ralph Eggleston, your production designer, and what you came up with for your visual palette in terms of celebrating that 50s and 60s architecture that we're so used to seeing, like in a Tab Hunter, Rock Hudson, or even Hitchcock's North by Northwest film, and the color palette of the muted colors and letting the vibrant neons pop for the superheroes.
I agree with you that Ralph Eggleston is an amazing talent. He came onto the first film when we were just having trouble with the size of it, and he kind of came in and helped Lou Romano out just getting it done, because it was sort of beyond us at that point. We were a smaller studio and the film was larger than we were. But Ralph loves movies like most people at Pixar. He really loves films, and he's always reading a new book, and he has a thing to show you, and he's kind of always kind of disgorging art and books and things that he found and sketches he's made, and he's just kind of spewing them out in every direction all the time. And the film really benefited from this fuel. But he thinks about color psychologically. He thinks about it in terms of what's going to surprise people, what's going to, and he's not afraid to make bold choices. The house that they wound up in, we were kind of working on it, and suddenly he came in one day, and we'd already put a lot of effort in another house, and we were under a lot of pressure because they took a year off of our schedule, and he said, okay, so I have this idea for the house, and you know, it's really going to screw things up for everyone, including me, but I have to say it, and here's the idea. You know, the house should not work for them. It should be initially impressive, but then you get in there and everything's wrong for a family, and there's just, you know, these things that are beautiful originally, the water things, they become like this problem, and it's the wrong house for them, and there's no real place for the baby's room, and there's a fireplace in the baby's room for no reason, and you know, and everything he's saying, you know, I'm going, oh, that's going to ruin this, and that's going to ruin that, but he's totally right. And damn, why is he right? And so I agreed to it, and it totally screwed up everything I had in the script in terms of, we need to see this in the foreground so we can see that in the background. Suddenly everything was a giant problem, and yet it was right, because the house needed to be impressive but wrong for the family, because they're not in a comfortable place yet. They have to find their way there. And that was a way of making the surroundings storytelling, which is really what good production design is.
Who's next?
Wait, what didn't Ralph say? Didn't he show that part of the movie at some mid-century modern architecture and furniture show? And when the part where the nice mid-century couch falls into the water, all the furniture collectors gasped.
That was made just for them. Yeah.
I was very impressed by the detailing of the terrazzo floor. As a person who loves mid-century architecture, I noticed that.
There you go. Right on. Fred.
Hi, I also have a question for Brad. I know whenever we've talked to you for another movie you've made, we keep asking you, is there going to be an Incredibles 2? Is there going to be an Incredibles 2? You always said you had an idea you were developing, so now that you finally did it, has the idea always been this, or how has it evolved since the first one?
It's been half this, two-thirds this. The idea of the role switch, that the assignment would go to Helen rather than Bob, I had when we were promoting the first film. And I also knew that I had the unexploded bomb of Jack's powers, that the audience knew that he had them, but the Pars did not. And I had other notions that I just wanted to see in an Incredibles movie, and some things like the raccoon fight that were originally done for the first movie, and there was no place for it, and I loved the idea. But this superhero part, the villain part, always seemed to change. And when I came to Pixar and said, I think I have the other part of the story figured out, the version that got greenlit, about 4 months, we got greenlit. It got the, you know, John and Nicole came on, and we got a crew, and we started spending money, and got a release date, and then the release date got moved up a year, and suddenly the pressure is huge, and that plot doesn't work. And now I'm screwed because I have a release date, and everybody's going, Incredibles 2, Incredibles 2, we're working on Incredibles 2, you know what you're doing, right? You know what you're doing, right? Right? And I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And
you got 2 years left, just two more years.
We're down on you. I hope you feel comfortable. You feel comfortable? Because everybody has high expectations, okay? Yeah. And I just realized it didn't serve the story, and so the villain plot kept changing. And it kept changing, and Ralph had to adjust to it. Everyone else had to adjust to it constantly, which only made it more anxiety. But I think that we wound up with the right version of this movie. And it wasn't until about a week ago I was talking in one of these things, and I realized that was also true of the first movie, that Incredibles was the only project that came outside of Pixar and was pitched to Pixar. And I had drawings, I had designs, I had a outline, you know, the whole thing, and how it looked, and all kinds of artwork that I paid for myself. And if they didn't want to make it, I was going to take it somewhere else. But I came with a villain that was a different villain than we wound up with. And in exploring a alternate opening when I came to Pixar, I introduced a villain that we killed off in the opening sequence, and that was a better villain than the one that we had. And suddenly, this guy's better than the one we had, and that was Syndrome. So the villain kind of, for some reason, I don't know why, but kind of comes last.
You know, I wanted to talk about how, you know, when you see an animated movie or there's doing PR for an animated film, it's okay, yeah, I'll take the kids. But I feel like the first movie, and especially the second one, it's just a great movie. Like, you don't need to take the kids. It's just great for, like, grown-ups.
Yeah, kids are strangely treated like beards, you know, I'm a single guy, but I want to see this. I found a kid. Can I come in now? Here's this kid. He was roaming the streets. I told him I'd pay for his ticket. Will you let me in? And it's like, no, man, it's an art form. You know, it's like, it's for anyone that likes movies. And you don't need to have a kid. And you don't, people are constantly coming up to me, my kid really enjoyed it. And I go, did you like it? And they go, oh, yeah, sure, but Billy really liked it. You know, and I'm like, I made it for you, and Billy can come, but I'm not a kid, and I made it something that I would want to see, and we're not kids, and we worked on
I'm
this.
I'm a kid.
And you're welcome. You can come anytime. You're welcome.
What's your take on that, Holly, about how this movie, you know, because we talked elsewhere about how it's really, you know, you just go like fly solo one day and see the movie, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, it's animated, but it just works on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we probably all felt that way about the first one as well, was that it was a movie that stood on its own. It, you know, it's not a kid's movie. In a way, this one is particularly more not a kid's movie, although kids totally dig it. There were a lot of kids in the audience in the premiere night who loved it. And even small kids love Jack-Jack and love Dash. So, but I think it works on, it's like Bob said, in a way, the movie has complexity that is really astonishing in that it's got like five different movies and they all work in concert with each other. You know, they all need each other, all five. But it's an incredible, like, fabric that's been woven together that is very sophisticated.
Absolutely.
I think that one scene with you two, like, early on in the film, and, you know, you go outside to talk because you're both out of a job, and, you know, like happens to everyone, your house just got
like blown up by a supervillain, and you're like, where are we gonna live? What are we gonna do for money? And there's just like, so you're like sharing, there's shared love there, but also just that shared worry. That's a really grown up, affecting, beautiful scene between the two of you.
Yeah. Right here, beer.
Hi, I want to circle back to something for Brad. We talked a couple of questions earlier about this, that there's been 14 years since the two movies, and there's a timeless quality to both movies, but there's been a sea change in pop culture, and superheroes were not the dominant force that they are now. And I'm just wondering how much did that affect or not affect the process of developing this movie, whether you felt a need to change anything or adjust anything owing to the rise of the MCU and, you know, everything else that's come along with this incredible explosion of superheroes.
Well,
was there anything that you went, let's not do that?
Oh, yeah, I immediately banned three-point landings. You know that.
Three-point landings.
I just said, no, we're not doing it on this film. Helen did it once in the first film. It's not cool anymore. We're not doing it. But really, the thing was... I'm such a blur now. What was the question? Marvel, okay. And all the superhero films. Okay. There was a dark moment when all the machinery was kicked into gear. Okay, you got the release date. Boom, 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 boom. And I realized 2 years from now, the film's going to come out. There's too many superhero movies now. Are people going to be just sick of this in 2 years? And I went, you know, just what I want to happen. You know, I arrive on the scene. You know, anybody ready for some fresh superheroes? Yeah. And everybody's like, you know. I had a dark moment. And then I realized that what excited me about the idea in the first place was not the superheroes. It was that it was about the family dynamic and people's roles in different parts of their life. And how superheroes, that genre is like a twisted lemon that you squeeze on top of this. It's not what the movie's about. And then I got excited again because to me, families are kind of a continent, fresh opportunities because it's so universal. And so I got excited again when I thought about it that way. And that was really what excited me about the first movie.
And also, you know, I rehearsed a three-point landing, and after a while, it didn't work.
Who's next? Yeah, right here. Yeah.
Hi, guys. I wasn't sure what to expect from Jack-Jack coming into this movie. We had such an explosion with him at the end of the first film. He turned out to be one of my favorite characters, but probably because of his partnership with the raccoon, and I just wanted to know... where did that come from? How did you guys, you know, decide to give Jack-Jack an animal villain? And,
Well, that was one of our key artists on the first film who helped design the characters and came up with a lot of great ideas. His name is Teddy Newton. He had this idea back on the original film, and he had a gang of raccoons that Jack-Jack kind of confronts, and the raccoons just kind of come up and shove Jack-Jack in his original drawings, and it went a lot darker, believe it or not. But they fought and went to the bottom of the pool and all this stuff. And I mean, but the idea always just killed me because raccoons look vaguely like robbers. And Teddy did a drawing where he's watching an old movie, like is in the film, and he sees a classic, you know, robber with a mask. And then he looks out in the yard and something is stealing from him. A robber is stealing from his family. It doesn't matter that it's garbage. Jack-Jack doesn't know that. He just knows that he's being robbed and he must do something about it. So I love that. It was so visual and clear, and it was such an off-the-wall idea that that was one of the things that I couldn't wait to do if we got another Incredibles going. Yeah.
Got time for two more questions. That's right back there. Let's go back there. Spread the wealth.
For Holly, Craig, Sam, ever since the first movie came out, do you have kids come up to you, recognize your voice, associate you with this movie particularly?
Kids don't do that. their parents do. And then they try to make the kid know who you are. That's Frozone, honey. And he's looking at you like, you don't have a blue suit on. And you're not making ice stuff, so. Nah. He said, where's my super suit, honey? Oh, what am I doing with this? What am I doing with this? And they have to give him a catchphrase, but they don't know who we are from Adam. Yeah. Now, as they got older, like the kids that are going to be now, the kids that were 4 and saw the movie are now 18. So they've been waiting. They're knocking little kids over to get in line. My daughter's 35. She's knocking big kids over to get in line. So, you know, they understand that part. But no, we don't get a new audience because we did a movie that kids really like. They have no idea who we are in our real selves. Or do they, Craig?
No, I mean, it's embarrassing, really, because, you know, the moms and dads are saying, look, Bill, there's Mr. Incredible. That's Mr. Incredible there. And the kid's just staring at you.
You
got to
throw him in his mouth.
Take
a picture with Mr. Incredible. This kid doesn't know who I am.
Okay, well, say something like Mr. Incredible. Go ahead. And then he'll, well.
Pick something heavy up.
In 14 years, I don't remember what I said in the first one. I mean, okay, how about this? It's showtime.
Pick up my car.
The kid is like,
lift my car up. Hold it.
Yeah. It's just embarrassing.
One of my best friends told her little daughter Anderson that I was going to be in this movie, and she took a video when she told her, thinking she'd be like, that's so cool. And she goes, Mommy, that's not true. And she goes, no, Andy, really, Sophia's going to be a superhero in the movie. And she goes, Mommy, she doesn't have all the things a superhero needs. She just was not having it. And I was like, well, okay, ego checked. Got it. Cool. Thanks.
From one more. Yeah, you're right in the back there.
Brad, in the film, when Jack's watching the TV, that's clearly a cartoon that you guys created. But later in the film, you use footage from Outer Limits and Johnny Quest. What was the thought behind that?
Well, one of my personal rules in an animated film is that if they're watching something on TV, it should be animated. The soundtrack of the old movie is an actual soundtrack from an old movie that we found that was perfect, and we animated to it. Johnny Quest is an animated show, so it fit into the universe, and it's the style of the film. It's that kind of action-adventure style from the early 60s, so it fits with our film. Outer Limits, we only used the beginning of it because it's still abstract. It's still lines and things. It's not visual photographs. And that part fit really well with the screenslaver thing, you know, because they're talking about taking control of your TV. And I just remember when I was a kid, that scared the crap out of me, you know, that TV once a week was being controlled by who? Aliens? But I couldn't leave the room, but I would just be hiding from the TV because it was being taken over. You know, we control the vertical, we control the horizontal. You know, and I'm like, they control the horizontal! You know? I just had to put it in there, you know?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know...
I have to quickly say, and I love Johnny Quest. So... a lot of people don't remember that it wasn't made for Saturday morning. It was made for prime time. It came on at night, and adults watched it, and people died in it, and it had everything an 8-year-old wants in entertainment. It has mummies, it has pterodactyls and guns, and a kid from another country who can levitate things, and a bodyguard who has a fling with a girl that might be dangerous, and you know, lasers and hydrofoils and jetpacks and reptiles and robot spies, and I just about exploded when I saw the opening titles to it. So we just had to give Johnny Quest a shout out. Had to.
There's your next movie. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Incredibles 2 opens on June 15th. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for being here and be incredible.